This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hello and welcome to another Books of the Year podcast from your friends at Books of the Year. I'm Simon and he's Matt.
I am. Yes. That is correct.
And everything is going pretty well.
Yeah.
And it seems to be pretty regular and we're doing it in a studio and we don't have to rely on your Wi-Fi.
No, we don't.
And everything's fabulous.
Those days are over.
You can get in touch with us, which we love it if you do. Booksoftheyear@yahoo.com is an email from Bob Peaks in Ashby de la Zouche. Dear Books and of the Year,
Very good.
Love the pod, although I listen out of sync and often have to play catch-up, so can't claim to be a super fan. Just recently, I listened to your episode with Cariad Lloyd. Fascinating. As someone who is getting on a bit, Bob's words, it made me really think about the end. I took Cariad's advice and actually talked to my daughter about my death wishes.
Oh.
It was a little awkward at first, but I feel so much better for having chatted to her about, again, in quotes, those things. And I think she felt good about it too. I also bought Cariad's book, which has just arrived, and I'm very keen to read more. Thanks for the entertaining, informative, and educational podcast. Thank you, Bob Peaks. And I do think, I remember when we were doing that interview thinking, okay, well, if you're just going to do one podcast about one book about grief,
yeah,
this is the one to listen to, this is the one to read, because she has spoken to so many people. And it didn't seem to be pushing a particular line or anything.
No,
it was just
no.
Saying, this is what I've learned from all the people that I have spoken to. So, Bob, thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed the interview and I hope you enjoyed Cariad's book.
Indeed. We've had bags of correspondence about our interview with Harlan Coben, which obviously is still available if you want to listen to that, where you found this podcast, as always. Thanks for all your messages. One of the many tweets we got was from Nicola, which said, just listen to the audiobook of I Will Find You. It's absolutely cracking. I loved it. He just keeps getting better.
If you'd like to get in touch, you can email us at any time. It's booksoftheyear@yahoo.com. We're on Twitter as well at Books of the Year.
Yes.
What's the Instagram?
On Instagram at pick any page. Pick any page.
Joanne Harris is waiting in the wings while she's sitting next to us for today's episode. Yes, Books of the Year, delighted to welcome Joanne Harris into our sumptuous studio with her new novel, Broken Light. Hello, Joanne, how are you?
I'm fine. It's lovely to be here.
It's not a bad little studio, really.
It's very nice. I could live here.
Okay, well, that's slightly dramatic. I think there's...
we could, you know.
There are some very nice flats built in an old gas station.
Yeah, I actually do live here, so, yeah.
Okay. Well, Broken Light is now going to be this is why we had to try and find the cover correctly, because there are different covers from depending on where you are. Matt will now describe the UK cover of Joanne's new book.
Okay, so the main colours on this book that's going to be on your bookshelves it's white and blue. So it's mainly a white background, but then you've got a woman's face silhouette, then shattering from the back into thousands of tiny shards, and then Joanne Harris in big black letters on the top, Broken Light at the bottom, with the subtitle, Bernie Moon Feels Invisible, Now It's Time She Made Them Look.
Okay, so there's also, one of the first things I came to was a playlist, which you must talk us through in just a moment, but introduce us. So that's what the cover looks like. Some people will still judge the book by its cover. For everyone else, they get the words of Joanne Harris. Introduce us to Broken Light.
Well, it's a sort of psychological thriller with possibly some paranormal elements to it. And basically, I mean, the way I tend to describe it is this. People who know my books know that I'm quite a fan of Stephen King. you know Carrie.
Yes,
everybody
indeed.
Knows Carrie.
Everyone knows Carrie.
So Carrie got her paranormal powers at puberty, which makes no sense at all, because why would you give paranormal powers to a pubescent girl? They're full of drama. Of course she burns down the school. She does awful things. She dies. So imagine that Carrie White had actually lived and had married, had a child, got a job, lived a totally normal life until she got her paranormal powers at menopause instead. So this book is kind of menopause Carrie.
That sounds as though it could have been a genuine light bulb moment.
It was. I just thought, hey, why don't I write menopause Carrie? And obviously it wasn't going to be set in America. It was going to be set over here. And it wasn't going to be like Stephen King at all, except that there is this idea behind it of women's power and coming into power and what happens. And I thought, well, having gone through menopause and having seen how invisible you do get, and also then having gone through chemo and people going, hey, when are you getting your superpowers? Which is a joke that people give you when you have chemo. I thought, okay, well, what if I did have superpowers? What if somebody of my age, what if a woman my age had superpowers? What would they be like? What would she do with them? How would that work?
It sounds as though you had a lot of fun.
I had super fun. But it also turned out to be a very dark book for all sorts of reasons. But it is dark and at the same time, I think, funny.
Yes, it is. Why did you say it turned out to be dark? It sounds as though you weren't expecting it to be that dark.
I never quite know what to expect of a book when I write it. I didn't know the character, so I had to explore her. And it turned out that she was a very sad character, that she had had quite a sad life, that she had a lot of problems, that she'd been hiding, as people like that sometimes do. And she explodes out of this sad life with these failed relationships into something else. And it's not a comfortable thing to do. And it wasn't entirely a comfortable thing for me to be her, to be her voice.
Yes. And this is the Bernie Moon that you're talking about, and Bernie Moon who Matt referenced at the beginning. But again, I just want to pick you up when you said it turns out that she was quite a sad character. It sounds like you didn't set out to write her that way. It's just that that's where the story took you.
Sort of, yes. I don't generally set out to write characters. I set out to get to know characters and then I write them. Or sometimes I get to know them by writing them. And it's a bit of an alchemical process, I have to say. It's a bit of a fumble in the dark. And some of Bernie is taken from some of my experience, but some of it's taken from elsewhere. And some of it just completely blindsided me and said, hey, here I am. This is what I'm going to say. This is what I'm going to behave like. And you're going to have to write this.
Matt said to me, in fact, last time we were here, you'll like this book. He'd started it before me because I've always liked magic. And it starts with some magic when Bernie goes to see the great Karovnik. Have I got that right? And sees some magic perform. I actually presented a magic show on ITV once, not very well, but and I've always loved doing card tricks and all that kind of stuff. So, but a fantastic place to start a story where a young girl is looking at a live magic show, but picking up different messages to everyone else.
Yes, I love magic too, in all its forms. And I just thought, okay, I'm going to have to explain Bernie, because the first scene kind of plunges you in the middle of something which needs a certain amount of explanation. And so I thought, okay, we're going to have an episode from her childhood before anything has really much happened to her. And which is also going to explain some of the themes that are going to emerge in this book, because a lot of this book is about women and their visibility and to a certain extent their anger. And so Bernie, who is very young, has gone to the magic show to see the great Karovnik, and she is fascinated by her and is just obsessed with the idea that she could be like her. And then she goes home and her mother says, that wasn't the great Karovnik, that was just his assistant. The great Karovnik was the guy in the top hat. And this was the person that Bernie had hardly noticed, because it was the lady in silver who was doing the clever things that she was interested in.
I want to ask you about let's delve a bit more into this superpower, because you've sort of alluded to it already, but we've not actually talked about what the superpower is that Bernie has. Just describe what she's able to do.
Well, it's much more of an implied superpower. It's not like Carrie White's superpower. She can't set things on fire. Although I did have fun playing with the idea that, you know, she could be doing pelvic floor exercises and moving the table up and down the way Carrie does. But I kind of thought, no, we're not going to go that way. It's going to be something that my readers can either take as a paranormal activity, or they can take it as something that's happened in her head, or something that's a metaphor for something else. So Bernie can basically see into other people's minds, and she sees it as looking into their houses. People have houses. They have front rooms that are public spaces that everybody looks into, and then they have secret rooms. And then they have rooms at the back that are even more secret, even from themselves. And Bernie has the ability to enter into other people's houses and in some cases rearrange the furniture. And also in other cases, smash things around a bit. And it's a power that she has had before and has repressed for a very, very long time because it's dangerous, because going inside people and moving their furniture is wrong.
The first time you talk about everyone having houses, light bulbs went off in my mind because it's such a great way of describing it, because we all do have that sort of the front room where when people come and visit you, that's the room we're going to take you in, and what a lovely house this is, and all the nice paintings. And I'm going to keep all of my nice books in this room, and aren't you going to think how wonderfully sophisticated I am? And then there are the other rooms, which actually I'm not going to take you into at all. Did that idea of how we present ourselves to others, did that just come to you like that? Let's describe it as being a house.
I thought, what would Bernie think? How would she visualise looking inside somebody? And Bernie is, well, not quite a housewife, but she is certainly very domestic. And she would think of it in that way. And so I gave her that image. And ran with it. If she had been a different character, I might have given her something else. But in the case of Bernie, houses make a lot of sense.
I think I'm now speaking on behalf of all your readers.
Wow, ambitious.
This is presumptuous. Yeah. Okay, maybe I should phrase this slightly differently. I think most people will presume that they're real, these powers that you're talking about. There'll be some that think it's, you know, an allegory or it's a metaphor or something. But I think most people will. And it reminded me of, I don't know if you saw a film years ago starring Anthony Hopkins called Magic.
Oh, yes.
And he had a ventriloquist doll. And all the way through the movie, you're thinking, is the ventriloquist doll possessed? Is Anthony Hopkins mentally ill? Is the doll controlling Anthony Hopkins? And it's left very open. Well, I think it answers the question at the end. I won't spoil it for people. But
it's a wonderful film. It's a wonderful book, too, by William Goldman.
But it kept me... That kept me guessing. And this book will keep you guessing. Mm. And you think, okay, is it... Are we just imagining things? Are we in her house? You know, is she letting us into rooms that we shouldn't really be allowed into? But my central thing is, do you think most people will think these are actual powers?
They might. I don't know. It's up to people to decide. And because I've got a quite broad spectrum of readers that go across actual realism into magic realism into outright magic and fantasy, I don't actually know where constant reader will sit on that spectrum. Also, I don't really want to tell people what to think. I would like them to draw some of their own conclusions from this. And I would much rather make them think than tell them what to think, if you know what I mean.
Can you say anything about, so there are two point of view characters that we have. So we have Bernie and we have Kate. And when we come across this, so this is right at the very beginning. When we come across Bernie, it says from the live journal of,
yes,
of Bernadette. What does that mean? What can you say about that?
Well, live journal used to be and still is an online platform for people to communicate and to write diaries. It precedes Facebook. I used to use it. Some people still use it, but mostly people don't use it anymore. I wanted to make it a diary format. I wanted Bernie to have somewhere to put her diary that nobody would read. So I thought, okay, she's going to use an antiquated platform, which is mostly now owned by Russians, and she won't have any followers there. So her diary will be there.
In brackets marked as Exhibit B1.
Yes. Yes, quite, because a crime will occur at some point and This is post-investigation.
Okay, so we have, but we so we have Bernie. We need to mention Kate just because we also see some events from her point of view. Tell us about her.
Kate is Bernie's age. She used to be her best friend. In fact, she was at the original magic show with the great Karovnik. Their parents were friends. Bernie's mother, who was always just a little disappointed in Bernie, would have liked her very much to be like Kate. Some years later, Bernie's husband would also have liked Bernie to be more like Kate.
He's useless, by the way.
He is yes, actually, he's yeah. the worst.
Yeah. Useless husband, Mark. Yeah. Sorry, I interrupted.
No, and so Kate turns out to be very popular, lovely, good at school, though not as good as Bernie, but also not weird like Bernie. And Bernie is thought of as a weird girl at school and is not popular. And so their friendship breaks up over a particular incident, which Kate doesn't remember very well, but Bernie does remember very well. And so their lives diverge. But they are still connected in a number of ways, partly because Bernie's husband once had a crush on Kate and is still sort of carrying a torch for her years later. But also because Bernie, I think, still loves Kate in a way. She was her first and best friend.
You mentioned very early on, Joanne, how Carrie, the Stephen King book, played such a role as far as inspiring you to write this story. And anyone who's listened to this podcast knows we are massive fans of Stephen King and his writing. It struck me reading yours that whereas Stephen King decides this is my idea with Carrie and this is the power she has, we then leave the story of Carrie once she's, you know, when we've had the massive to-do at the prom and everything's set on fire and everyone's dead, we then leave her story. And it struck me the strength that your book had was I'm going to have Bernie having this power, but then I'm going to show you the consequences of that power on the other people. And I'm being very careful here because I don't want to give anything away. However, there is a character that Bernie uses her power on, who is, I'm going to not swear, but he's not a nice guy.
He's the worst as well. He's a lot of
awful.
The men in this book are the worst, I'm afraid.
Well, he's definitely the worst of the worst guys. And the way to illustrate that is he's tried to use a date rape drug on a girl. And Bernie intervenes. No spoilers at all. However, there are impacts beyond that. And it struck me that there was one story to write where it would end with Bernie stopping it and everything is fine. There is a far more interesting tale to be told of what happens to that guy once Bernie has interfered, has decided I'm going to step in and stop this. And that for me is what makes this book stand out from others, is that your decision to go, I'm going to go that extra mile and tell you what happens next to these people, because it's not enough to just decide something bad has happened, I've stepped in, everything's okay again. That would be a superhero book. That's not what this is.
No, it's definitely not a superhero book. It's a messy book in some ways. It's a book about actions and their consequences, sometimes a long time after the action. It's about the consequences that happen to other people as a consequence of those things. And yes, it is Carrie grows up. So it's not as simple as Carrie. And by the way, I love Stephen King. I love Carrie. But it's really not like that, because Stephen King's book is extremely focused on events, whereas I really want to focus on people and on time spent with those people. I wanted also to take out a lot of the just general girl-on-girl meanness that's in Carrie and focus instead on friendships and relationships. And I also didn't want the victims to be quite such black and white characters. I wanted everybody to have their own resonance within this group of people that I've built up. So although I say that people are the worst, nobody is entirely evil. Nobody is entirely good.
Martin is entirely useless.
He is entirely useless.
He is quite a lot useless, but he has... She stayed with him for various reasons, which are not necessarily bad reasons.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
There is a, is it a journal, is it an online journal that she's reading called My Big Fat Menopause?
Yes.
By D.D. LaDouche. LaDouche.
Yes, but we can call her LaDouche because she's also kind of the worst.
Yeah.
This just sounded like, here's everything that is terrible about literature, some of the literature that's aimed at women, particularly coming from America. This is what it's not like, and this isn't very helpful.
Yes, well, Dee Dee became Bernie's go-to influencer because, you know, she presents menopause in this hyper-positive way, and she's super bouncy about it. And to her, the answer is always, have another cup of herbal tea, dear, have sex, you know, wear one of these wonderful outfits that you can't afford and just lounge on your deck and just enjoy getting into the prime of your life. And it's so unrealistic to Bernie that in a way it's a kind of escapism for her, but it's also a sort of comic relief because sometimes Bernie's real life gets awfully dark and I have to relieve her with something. I have to give her some level of lightness in there. Otherwise we would all be weeping into our tea by now.
One of the things I enjoyed particularly was the way you use social media. I mean, you're on Twitter a lot, and a lot of people follow your tips and your writing ideas, and on YouTube and so on. But a lot of writers struggle, I think, with using, like, the mobile phone has messed so many things up. You know, wouldn't it be so much easier if, oh, look, my phone's out of battery, yeah, or I'm in an area, you know, that doesn't get any signal. And so, but sometimes it just feels very lumpy, a bit like when some authors invent a pop song and a pop star that doesn't really exist. You think, no, that doesn't really feel realistic. The way you use Twitter particularly feels as though you still like Twitter. And it's used convincingly, and some of the madness and some of the hatred that's out there, you use very well.
Well, I use what I see, and I use what has played a part in my life. And I find that Twitter, for all its ills, is also a positive, at least for me. And so I'm still on it. I still use it. And also, I think you're right. It's very difficult to ignore social media because it's such a huge thing in our lives. We either set stuff in the 80s or we run with it, or we create some sort of power outage, which means that nobody can use social media. But even Bernie, who is quite square, definitely uses social media because she's partly very lonely. And so I wanted to give her a community online because there is a lot about mirrors in this book. There is a lot about seeing and being seen or not being seen. And I saw Bernie very much as the Lady of Shalott, who looks into her mirror, and the mirror is, of course, the internet here, to enjoy the outside world because she's afraid. She's afraid that something terrible will happen if she actually steps out into the real world. And so it was useful to me to use that partly as a community and partly also as a metaphor. And when Bernie eventually does come into her power, she finds a way of stepping beyond this mirror into the real world with its real consequences. And that is part of her story. It's an important part.
One of the things I saw you were talking about recently is the importance of the opening line and 10 things that we need to understand about getting the opening line. Was your opening line in this book straightforward? Did it just emerge? Did you go back to it? Or
My opening line was not actually the line that I went for. In the end, it would have been a good opening line, but it would have given a slightly different tone to the beginning of the story. And so instead, I put the whole of the Great Korovnik scene there instead. Otherwise, I would have opened with Bernie lying in bed in a lake of menstrual blood going, fuck it, what a way to start the weekend, which would have been actually a pretty great opening. But, you know, So I ended up not doing that.
Okay. What we do get is the first seven. Can I say what it's your line, you say.
Oh, I don't remember what it is. Go on, I've got no memory at all.
The first seven years of my life are a blank.
That's it, yes. Yes, and I mean, to me, actually, that's a pretty good opening for Bernie, because she does have enormous blanks in her awareness of herself and other people and what's happened. And yeah, there are things there that need to be found and rooted out in this narrative. It's not an easy narrative. The reader has to work a little bit too.
Yes. No, I just think it's interesting because sometimes you have a big show off opening line, you know, like a line that takes an entire paragraph. Mm. You're thinking, oh my goodness me, that's taken a lot of work. But I love the fact that you think people may well be judging me on the first page. And if I'm not hooked, there's a lot of other things competing for my attention. But you go straight in, you hook them in.
Well, I think it's important. It's not necessarily important to have a great opening line, although some people, like Ian Banks, are just masters of the hook line. But I think it's much better to have a hook paragraph or a hook page or a hook chapter, because otherwise it can feel a bit cheap.
I knew I was going to enjoy the book from the opening page. And so I'm massively shallow and judge things very, very easily. And so when I don't need to be hooked in the opening line or opening paragraph. However, I need to know I'm in safe hands. That I think, oh, right, the writing here is pretty good. I'm going to be okay. So I'm going to just go along with this for the ride. I do want to talk to you about something that is right at the centre of this book that we have sort of skirted around, but I think we need to delve into, and that is men's violence against women. And this is not a spoiler, right in the middle of the book, a woman has been assaulted and killed in a park near where Bernie lives. And although we've sort of said, you know, there are some men in this book who are awful or dreadful or useless or whatever, I didn't feel reading it that this was a all men are crap book. However, what I did feel is, why is it that men are getting away, or some men are getting away with unspeakable acts again and again? And I wondered whether this was written because obviously right now we are in the middle of what feels like a tidal wave of unaccounted men performing violence against women. And we've had Sarah Everard. We've then had the massive problems in the Met as well. How much was that playing into your mind when you were writing this?
Well, I think inevitably I wrote it alongside the Sarah Everard case. And it was also on the tail of the Me Too. And it was also against lockdown. And so some of it ended up being a lot about isolation and also about fear and the fear of violence. And I think, you know, very clearly those things were linked. I didn't consciously pursue it, but I found that I was pursuing it simply because current events were leading me down that path.
You have words at the back of the book, you describe this as a strange and unexpected book.
Yes, it was. I wasn't expecting to write it. It's
because?
Well, because it's, to me, it's a little peculiar. It's, for a start, it's urban, whereas I don't generally write about life in cities. It's neither magic realism nor outright fantasy. It's sometimes darker than what I'm used to writing. It feels quite personal too, even though I am definitely not Bernie. There's enough of me inside Bernie for me to feel at home inhabiting her for that time. And some of it feels as if it might be a bit confessional. It's not really, but it's a kind of filtration process. Some of what I wrote was my feelings about having cancer treatment during lockdown. Some of it was about having gone through menopause. So those are not normally things I write about or I talk about much.
Was there any stage at which you were thinking, am I even right to go ahead with this book? You know, I'm sure you've got quite a few other stories up and running. Did you ever feel uncomfortable enough to not continue?
No, because I always go ahead with whatever it is that I want to write at the time. I mean, sometimes I think, will anybody like this book? That was definitely a question. Will anybody get it? Will anybody see what I'm trying to do here? But, you know, I wrote it anyway because that's what I do.
And has the, just on the internet and the importance of the internet and social media, I just wonder, were there any... I work with people who have decided not to be on it anymore because of the amount of horrible stuff that's on, because Elon Musk is clearly an idiot.
Absolutely.
And a force for evil in the world. Evil is the wrong word, but a force for all the worst.
Yeah, he's not life-enhancing in any way.
Yeah. Have you ever thought about finding something else?
Well, yes and no. I mean, yes, there are some awful things about being online, and there's abuse and there's trolling and there's misinformation, and there is also huge rafts of time wasted arguing with people you don't know about something you won't change. But there is also community. There's also support. There's also communication. And actually, those things are really what writing is about. Communicating, getting stuff out there. So, yeah, I mean, I think really the positives still outweigh the negatives by quite a long way.
I did a bit of work the way Bernie would have done in terms of just ferreting around and finding out what people are saying about your book. And so I'll bring this up. You'll be fully ready for this. But the only thing that I can find that people are going, oh, I can't be doing with this, is the fact that you talk about hot flashes and not hot flushes.
Yeah.
So hot flushes is obviously often used to describe one of the symptoms of menopause, but you use hot flashes.
I do.
And there are some online idiotic people saying, oh, I can't be doing with this.
It's an Americanism.
What is, oh, is that? What is there? Well, you've read the
same. Yeah.
Okay. So
several people have said this. I'm a little disappointed, really, that anybody who knows my work wouldn't have thought, I wonder why she used that instead of going, how ridiculous, she's used an Americanism. I mean, actually, I wanted to use that term because I wanted it to signify something different. To me, the hot flush is a symptom of menopausal unease. But Bernie's hot flashes are quite different. She gets physical symptoms, but she also gets paranormal symptoms. She has flashes of insight, of inspiration, of intuition. It's what precedes her entry into someone's house. So I wanted to use a term that was close enough but not close enough to actually make the distinction. So it was a very conscious choice. I hope that most people will see that and will read beyond the word into what the word is actually trying to convey. But yeah, I mean, people may well read things in different ways. Who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, my mother read a proof of this book and she just hated it.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because?
Oh, why are the women so angry? Why are the men all such douches? This sort of thing, you know, it was. And I said, well, you know, it is a book about women's anger, Mum. Oh, well, women aren't like that, she said. But, you know, she's not like that. But some women are. And some women, I think, will probably recognise themselves. I don't think I really wrote it for somebody of her generation, honestly. But, you know, we'll see. Everybody has a different way of seeing a book, which is actually the glorious thing about books, is that, you know, you send them out like seeds into the air and sometimes they land somewhere and they grow, and sometimes somebody goes, oh, I can't be doing with this, and they move on and it's fine. And whatever somebody gets from it is at least partly what they bring to the table. You know, if you have nothing of yourself to bring to a story, then it's unlikely that you will engage with it in the same way that someone whose experience finds something there to relate to will find that there's something of them in there.
I would like to encourage you not to take too much notice of, first of all, the people who complain about hot flashes, but also your mother in this case.
Oh, I've been ignoring her for years. She hardly ever writes. She hardly ever likes anything I write.
Okay, what's that about? I'm looking deeply into your house now.
Oh, well, my mother, both my parents are teachers. They would have liked me to be a teacher, so I was. For 15 years, I was a good teacher, actually, but I always wanted to write. My mother has never quite forgiven me for leaving teaching and feels that I really should go back. So,
it's a proper job.
Yeah, it's a proper job with a pension that she understands. All this nonsense, I'm not sure she can really get her head around it.
You've written so many bestsellers, Joanne. Because this is, as in your words, a strange and unexpected book, do you get nervous at all when a new book is on its way as to how it will go down and how your readers will perceive it?
Oh, always. Always. It doesn't matter how many books there have been.
Well, I'm going to say reassuring words. And that is that your mother is wrong.
Yes, let's just agree on that.
I should tell her you said so.
I've never actually said that to any guest. No. Never felt confident
enough.
It feels
wrong, doesn't it? Yeah.
And it's compelling. And I was thinking about Bernie this morning, even though I was trying to clear up the clutter in the house. I was thinking about Bernie. She's a character that stays with you, I think.
Well, I'm so pleased to hear it. I hope that's what people will take from it, that she is somebody to think about. But she isn't necessarily a design for living or me or perfect in any way. But yes, remembering Bernie, I think, is a good takeout.
Joanne Harris, thank you very much. The book is Broken Light. There will be a Q&A along very shortly in a couple of days' time with Joanne. But for the moment, Joanne, thank you very much.
Thank you.